Welcome back. Will you please join me in the Serenity Prayer? God, thank you.
To the death of the courage
Please respect our speaker and silence your cell phones. Our speaker is being recorded with her permission. CDs can be purchased from Darren. I would like to introduce the speaker, Kim from Laguna Niguel.
Thank you, Caitlin. Oh, I'm hoping that any minute this feeling of wanting to throw up will pass. Maybe if I breathe. I'll start with what I know. I know that my name is Kim S. I know that my sobriety date is July 31st, 1992, class of 92. That's right. And happy birthday, Scott, with 4 years, and Gina with 25. That's amazing. And Darren's going to join me on the stage. I'm going to share with you what it was like for me and then what happened. And I love my what happened. I think there's a lot of value in what happened for me. I like to go back to what happened because I sometimes forget how bad it was. And then a little bit about what it's like today. I was just telling Caitlin and Andrew I get a little bit lost trying to encapsulate 20 years of sobriety in like 10 minutes. And I'm like, do I talk about steps? Do I talk about my sponsorship? Do I talk about the traditions? What do I talk about? So hopefully that will just come. I went in the bathroom and I asked God to speak through me and share with you what it is that he thinks that I have that could be maybe a piece of hope for you or a little bit of strength or courage to just stay sober one more day. I'm grateful that it's a day at a time. I'm truly grateful that it's a day at a time. I was sitting here and I was trying to meditate and I was trying to remember what it was like, the pertinent parts of what it was like, because I could get into that. I was born in 1969 at Naval Air Station Pensacola and you guys will all fall asleep. And I would too. And I heard a kid next door just going berserk. And I was like, you know what, God, that is what it was like. I think I came out alcoholic. I came out alcoholic and in an alcoholic environment. And God bless my father. May he rest in peace. He was married to an alcoholic. And he's trying to be an officer in the Marine Corps. And my mom's trying to try marijuana. And there we are, the two of us, Jim and Kim. And we transferred a lot. He's Marine Corps, so we went around Pensacola, North Carolina, Cherry Point. I don't remember any of that. I'm like wee little. I think 1973 is when I was brought out to California. He was transferred out here to El Toro. And I lived off La Plata at Crown Valley Parkway and went to the Gerber Baby Center. At the time, Crown Valley Parkway was one road in and one road out, and there was cows everywhere and a Dairy Queen, and I thought I lived in the country, and I kind of crack up now that I live in the OC. I've now sold a house last week, one block from where I lived with my dad. So I've just done a full circle in my life. It's interesting where I'm at today. So we live here, and obviously mom's wild and dad's conservative, and we all know where that's going to end up. I'm in Pines Park in 1974, and mommy gives Kimmy and Jimmy a little talk about how mommy and daddy aren't going to live together. And I think, hallelujah. Because it was the disciplinarian that was leaving. And little did I know that for the next, 5 to 10 years, that I would transform into like Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. And that I would be unsupervised. And that I would be stealing a pack of Winston cigarettes at 8 years old. I think they were Winston's. Up on the refrigerator, she'd keep a thing. And this is not about my mom. My mom has her own story in Alcoholics Anonymous. Without my mom being sober and without San Clemente Fellowship, I would not be here today. I would not. My recovery starts in Larry and Lorraine Kane's January birthday party living room. So there I am, 8 years old, and I'm smoking, and all the kids are hanging out at our house, and our house is the cool house. And 8 sounds young. At least 8 felt young for me when I got sober to start my career. 8 is not young, and I'm a parent now of a 16-year-old, and I'm blessed with the fact that she thinks partying is gross. Thank you. Because by 16, you'll know that I'm out of control. So it just starts, and pyramid parties with piles of cocaine on the table were a Friday night and Saturday night regular thing in our house. It was okay for kids to drink alcohol in our house. It was not okay for kids to go out and use a spoon and get anything off the coffee table, which is understandable. Fast forward to 12 or 13, and you get the sit-down talk about mom doesn't want you to buy drugs on the street. They might be dangerous. If you need drugs, get them from me. Okay. The first time that I was shown how to smoke marijuana, I blew bong water in my mom's face. We laughed about it and ordered a pizza. And that's just how I was raised. And it didn't seem abnormal. It just didn't seem abnormal in the 70s and 80s to be partying at home with your mom and your brother. And if my mom went out of town, God bless her, my brother and I threw keggers. And I went to San Clemente High, I went to Shore Cliffs, I went to Ole Hansen. I was right here in San Clemente. We lived off Estrella. If you have any children that are 30 or 40, whether they're male or female, I apologize, because I was probably the bad influence in the group. And I learned at an early age that when I was good, I was good, but when I was bad, I was better. And the only way that I got attention is if I got completely out of control and it had consequences. Because then everything kind of stopped for a little while, and I realized that if I wanted attention, that I had to do something bad. I didn't know that then, that I was craving attention. I didn't know that I was just craving, like, some adults in my life to say, you know what, this is how you're supposed to be doing things, in a little direction. One of the things I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is the foundation and the direction. It's just, I'm like a dog and I need to be trained. Like, if I know what to do well, then I'll do it. And Alcoholics Anonymous is my first experience with foundation and direction. My first arrest is at 14 at Doheny State Beach with open containers. My second arrest is Mission Viejo Mall when they opened the new Macy's, and I decided I wanted a leather jacket and some makeup, and I would steal it. And it just started. And that's me not knowing that it wasn't right and not having a lot of consequences. I started using some party favors. I like Gina calling it expediting my disease. and I like things, too, that helped me lose insane amounts of weight and keep me up for 3 or 4 days. It was great. At age 18, I was told by some of my friends that were still just okay with drinking beer and smoking pot down at Pochi that I was out of control. And someone double dog dared me, which if you enroll in Alcoholics Ego, they're going to take it, right? That I couldn't get off my other party favors. And so from 18 to 20, I just decided that I would be just an alcoholic. I made a conscious decision to be just an alcoholic. So I wasn't insulted when I went on several court cards to the San Clemente Friendship Center. And it was next to Rainbow Sandals. It was a lot of fun to hang out there on my first three court cards. I had no idea on my first three court cards that I could actually take the opportunity to look inside and ask myself if I was an alcoholic. What I did know was that there was really cute guys there, that if I smoked enough pot on the way there, I would really enjoy a chocolate donut, and that it would only last about an hour and a half, and then I would get what the judge wanted was a signature. And so I went through a few court cards from 18 to 20. At a party when I was 20 years old, someone introduced me to something called crystal meth. And I went on a little bit of a tear for the next couple of years. And I ran out of money. I ran out of cash advancing. I maxed out my credit card. And by 22, all I could afford was Lucky Lager. I was living in Mountain View Apartments off Lake Forest in Maryland. So it's a classy place. I wasn't living there just by myself. I was living in an apartment with 5 other people with 2 bedrooms. It converts nicely. If you don't put a dining room table in the dining room and you put up a little Chinese screen, that can be Bill's bed, and we did it, and we lived like, I don't know, we lived like fraternity brothers. And I thought that was normal. We had Lucky Lager boxes covered with sheets for end tables and coffee tables, and that was just my life, and I didn't see anything wrong with it. I have to tell you that I took the proficiency test at San Clemente High when I was 16 because I thought school was a waste of time. I stopped attending school before I knew whether or not I passed it. Thank God I passed it. I started immediately at Saddleback College, and there was an internal drive at that time, not realizing I was an alcoholic, to not be like her. And we all have that thing when you don't want to be like someone in your life. I didn't want to be like my mom. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I didn't want to be promiscuous. I'm being recorded, so I won't say what I want to say. And little did I know I was becoming all of those things overnight. Last year of my drinking was extremely lonely. and I was working at Bank of America, Capital Palisades, which I now believe is a Craig and Auto Parts, maybe. And I was a bank manager during the day, and I was living with my mom again off Lantern Hill, and she was having AA book studies in the living room, and I was in the bedroom drinking 40 ounces, getting ready to go out, and I didn't go out till about 8 or 9 at night. And one of the girls that she sponsored loved to go out dancing in bars, so she started to become my designated driver, which was good for me. And we would go to the Cowboy Boogie Company in Anaheim, a little embarrassing, but I liked the two-step, and I liked line dancing, and I liked all that fun stuff. And one night she couldn't give me a ride, and I went up, and it was Cinco de Mayo, and there was a hot salsa contest going on, and the owner offered me free drinks all night long if I'd wear this skimpy little thing with a skirt, and I said, sure. And I woke up the next morning in jail, and I received my first DUI, and that was in 1992, and it was May. And it just all started to come in. I had no more funds. I got home from the DUI, and my mom had gone to our sister program and learned how to say no. And she said she could no longer watch me die, and it was time for me to move out, because I had left my hillbillies in Lake Forest. I'd moved back home one more time. I moved back in with the hillbillies, and that's what I did. I came back and forth to my mom 4, 5, 6, 7 times from 17 to 23. And she'd always try and help me, and there was no helping a kid when you're on an alcoholic tear. I sponsor women today that have teenagers that are using heroin and other substances, and I say that God's got a plan, because you just can't stop us till we're done. I went into court, I pled guilty, I used my Visa card, I got out of there, I started going to DUI school. I'm still drinking and using. I go on my last bender in the end of July in 1992, and I wake up after a few days, and I'm wearing Wranglers and Ropers and all this stuff, and I go to pull out everything in my pockets to see if I have enough money, because I'm in low blood sugar and I'm shaking and I need to eat. And all I've got is Visa cash advances. And I called my mom up and I said, Mom, would it be possible for you to come over and bring me some money? I need to go to Lucky's and get some groceries. And she said, no, honey, I'm busy today. Click. And I was like, oh, Al-Anon. And I walked into the bathroom, and I'll never forget walking into the bathroom and having that moment where, as I'm walking into the bathroom, I catch what I look like. And the eyeliner's down, and the hairspray has the hair cocked to one side from where I'd passed out. And I looked, but there was nothing looking back at me. There was just nothing looking back at me. And so I called my mom back, and I said, if you won't give me money, will you drop off groceries? And that was the big time when the soup in the can thing came out, and all you had to do was add some meat, and you had like enough soup for 5 days. And I said, just drop off soup fixings. I'll eat soup for a few days. And it was normal for me to live weeks at a time on Top Ramen or Jell-O. I really had just had no money. And she said, I can't, honey. I'm sorry. I'm busy. Like, in the next few minutes, I contemplated whether or not I had the willingness to try and take my own life. And I've had suicidal thoughts my whole life. I've never tried to take my own life. I've always wanted to drive a car off the road past the chart house, right off into Dana Point. But I always saw my car just floating. And me having to tell people that I couldn't even kill myself. And, you know, grandiose ego, right? And so I was standing there, and I really didn't know what to do when the phone rings. And my mom said, if you can behave yourself, take a shower and promise not to speak to anybody, I'll pick you up in 1 hour. And I said, okay, what are we going to do? And I said, we're not going to one of those AA potlucks, are we? And mind you, she's been sober for 5 years, so for 5 years, every January, I've been in Larry and Lorraine Cain's home, like this, wondering what you guys are all doing. You know, the jaw going, no, I don't want to eat, Marguerite, here, eat, and people all around me, and Larry being nice, and me flirting with Mike, and me dating their son Mike, and me dating everybody in San Clemente. But I saw the love, and I saw the laughter, but I didn't want to go. I was in such bad shape that day. I didn't want to go to someone's home, and I didn't want to try and be polite and not embarrass my mom. And she said, yes, honey, it's an AA potluck, but it's not in someone's home, so you won't have to speak to anybody. It's in a church. And I said, okay. So she picks me up. And I don't remember the drive from Lake Forest to Laguna Beach, but I remember arriving in Laguna Beach, and I remember arriving there, and there were thousands of people in my mind, which when I was new, this meeting had hundreds of people. You know how that is. And I got there, and I went for the orange soda. And I drank my first three orange sodas to get out of low blood sugar, and then I made my way through the buffet line once, twice, maybe three times, until I could just be, until I knew that I was all right in my own skin. And I looked around, and there was some moccasins, and there were people talking about the guy making moccasins in the nut ward, and I'm thinking, this is a really weird party. I better leave. So I went out on the corner of St. Anne's and Glenary, and I just sat in the curb, and I had my feet in the gutter, and I had some cigarettes, and I was just sitting there, and I ate orange soda, and I was grateful that my mom had brought me to Laguna and that I had eaten, because I didn't know how I was going to eat that day. And it doesn't dawn on me that there's hundreds of people that have the solution and that I'm sitting by myself on the curb. It doesn't dawn on me because I'm not thinking about any of that. But all I know is a moment later I look down and there's a really nice set of shoes. And I'm a shoe person and a watch person. And I was like, And I look up and it's an older man and he's in a full suit and he's in dress shoes. And he says, "Hi, honey, do you think you're smitten with the disease of alcoholism?" And I remember I've promised my mom that I'll try not to cuss and I'll try not to be rude and I'll try not to do anything. And what comes flying out of my mouth is, it's 1992 and we don't use words like effing smitten. And he looks up and he knows he's talking to an alcoholic. I'm out in the gutter, right? And he goes, "Well, let me tell you something. If you find that you're smitten with the disease of alcoholism," and he doesn't mind his word smitten, I think it's retarded, but I'm like, whatever. He goes, "You're going to find out that you have the only disease with a choice." It's 1992, we're in Laguna Beach. He goes, "Do you think any of the people in Laguna Beach right now that have AIDS wish they had a choice?" I go, "Yeah, I guess." He goes, "Do you know anyone who's had cancer?" And I said, "Yeah, my grandfather died of cancer." He said, "Well, do you think he wished that he had a choice to put his disease in remission?" I said, "Yeah, I imagine he would want a choice." And I'm not getting that AA or alcoholism is a disease. I'm just kind of intrigued by his talk. And I see out of the corner of my eye, Gold LeMay, flying at the warp of speed, apologizing, Dr. Paul, I am so sorry. I'm sorry about my daughter." And he stood up and he said, "Diane, this is your daughter, Kim." And she said, "Yes, it is." And I stand up and I'm like, "He's a doctor? Why is there a doctor on the street in Laguna Beach? Like, is he doing house calls?" Not getting it. Not getting it at all. Not getting that I just got 12-step by one of the people that's in the big book. Not understanding that the guest of honor has left his party to talk to a kid in the street, a kid with a bad attitude. I'm not getting any of the significance of that. And he stands up and he goes, "Diane, don't ever apologize for Kim. She may need her fighting spirit for the battles that lay ahead of her." And I thought, wow, I kind of like him now. Smitten. Kind of smitten. I'm kind of smitten with this little guy named Paul. And Susie H., we all, God love Susie H., she says, "Goodbye, Di," and she's going to go to the San Clemente Friendship Center, and she's going to the 4:30 meeting, and she hits a button, and the top goes down on a BMW, and I think, cha-ching, I want to go with her. And my mom goes, "Oh, no, no, if you want to go to a meeting, I'm taking you to a meeting." Susie goes, "If she wants to go with me, let her go with me." And then they do this little wrestle. Still so out of it, some people ask me after I speak, "Did you go to the meeting with your mom? Did you go to the meeting with Susie?" I don't know. I know that I was in the San Clemente Club and that I'm detoxing, and I look up and I see wooden steps and I see the word alcohol once and I see God all over the place. And I think, I can't do it. I don't have a belief in a higher power. I can't have what these people have because I don't have a God. And the meeting ends and everyone stands up and they're going to hold hands, and I said, "What are we doing?" And they said, "We're doing the Lord's Prayer." And I said, "I don't know the words. I haven't done school. I haven't done church. I haven't been raised." Well, I've been raised by an older brother, really. And an alcoholic mom who did the best that she could. And I just looked around, so I didn't say anything. And I watched everyone do the Lord's Prayer, and the whole little keep coming back. And I thought, this is so stupid. And it's probably the first time I was in an AA meeting, although I had done three court cards sober. And all I knew is I didn't have a God. I wasn't going to be able to do AA. And we walk out on the sidewalk, and they say, "What would you like to do now?" And I said, "I'm hungry." Imagine that. And my fine dining experience as an Alcoholics Anonymous started, and they took me to Caro's. And after Caro's, they asked me what I wanted to do, and I did not want to go back to Lake Forest with all the Lucky Loggers and all the hillbillies and all of that. So I said, "Is there any way that someone can take me to another meeting?" And someone who hadn't been at Dr. Paul's party all day long said I was going to go to the Crown Valley speaker meeting. And we went to the Crown Valley speaker meeting. And to me, that was really huge. That was like going to the Anaheim Convention Center. It was just huge. But what I saw was younger people. I hadn't seen younger people at Dr. Paul's party or San Clemente. And I was standing there, and I was like, okay, all right, you made it through the day. You really didn't know how you're going to make it survive through the day from low blood sugar. Today's been an okay day. And we go in and Cindy Martindale's speaking, and she's going through breast cancer, and she'd had her breast removed. And she wasn't drinking. And I thought, I drink over credit card debt? I drink over having an alcoholic mom? She's not drinking and she has cancer. It hit me. But I'm not at all ready to admit I'm an alcoholic, so every day people have given me their numbers and I get off work at Bank of America and I can't drive all the way to Lake Forest because I'm used to going over to Rob's Liquor off Estrella and getting a 44-ouncer to make my drive to Lake Forest Drive, and I can't go to get the 44-ouncer, and I don't want to go to Lake Forest, so I call the people who've given me their numbers, and I go to a Monday meeting, and I'm introduced to the Tuesday night beach meeting at Tower 6, and they do cheeseburgers. Hallelujah, no top ramen. I am happy. I'm 23. I don't know what's going on, but I'm doing this little meeting thing, and I meet people. I meet Neil, I meet Larry, I meet people. I just meet people, and they're nice people. And they remember me, and they talk to me. And they tell me where to go Wednesday, and they tell me where to go here. And Saturday night, I'm at Capo by the Sea, and I'm on day 6 of continuous meetings. I don't realize that I'm joining AA. I don't realize that I've been 12-stepped. I don't really realize a whole lot for the beginning. And they ask for newcomers, and I don't know why, and I don't know how, but I stood up, and I said, my name's Kim, and I'm alcoholic. For the first time in my life, and I did the first step, and I admitted to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I was pissed afterwards. My mom's happy, women are happy, she said it, and I'm pissed, and I mean pissed. I did not want to be her. I did not want to be powerless. I do not want to try and do AA. I do not want to go to potlucks. I don't want to throw potlucks. I don't want to be at potlucks. But I say I'm an alcoholic, and what happens next for me was nothing short of a miracle, but Kim F. from San Clemente, the other Kim F., gets up and she takes the podium, and she's in mortgage by day, and she's got the wardrobe that I have, which is the business suits and the Wranglers and the Ropers and the surfer girl, and she's got the chameleon, and she tells her story, and she talks about her son Ricky, and she drives off in a yellow Porsche. I don't know what it is about cars and me, but I see the yellow Porsche and I think, oh my God, I got her number, she got my number. We disconnect. We either lose each other's numbers, I don't ask her to be my sponsor. And I meet up with her at the Tower 6 beach party at the end of the summer. And she sees me and I see her, and there's that moment of recognition because we've both thought about each other ever since that night. And I don't know how much time went between those 2 days, maybe 30 days or 60 days, but I see her, and it's that moment where I run right out to her, and she's playing frisbee with her son or building a sandcastle or something. And I go, oh my God, I've thought about you every day for 45 days. Will you please be my sponsor? And she said, I'll be your sponsor. Are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? Those first 90 days, you guys, I was drinking near beer. I was still going to the cowboy boogie. I'm still doing everything I shouldn't do because I'm still pretty angry that I'm an alcoholic, but I am not drinking. I'm still a hoe. I'm still doing all of my old behavior. I haven't done anything about the credit card debt. But I see her, and I ask her to be my sponsor, and she says, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I said, I am. And she goes, are you willing to work the steps to the best of your ability? And I said, I am, but I have a problem. And she said, what's your problem? Because, you know, we all have to qualify our issues and make ourselves special. And I said, I don't believe in God. And she goes, you don't believe there's a God? And I said, no, let me take that back. I believe that there's a God, but I don't believe that he loves me. And I'd had such a painful upbringing. And there were things in my story during that time. Mom's boyfriends, when mom passed out, come see Kim. You know, my mom's mom committing suicide when I'm 13. She was my only maternal figure in my life. There were just things where I had created a story that made me believe that God didn't love me. So I wouldn't be able to turn my will and my life over to the care of God because he didn't care about me. I was insignificant. And she said, do you believe that I believe? And I said, I believe that you believe. I'd heard her story. And she said, okay, I want you just to be willing to believe that I believe. Could you be willing to believe that I believe? And I said, I'll be willing to believe that you believe. And she goes, it's all you'll need. We're not on the third step. Why are you worrying about God? We're on the first step. And she made me work the steps, and we worked the steps in order. And I did what Scott did, and I went to the South Coast Medical Center, and I did a 4-step workshop. And when they said, divvy up and go do your 5th step, I looked around the room, and I thought, these people do not want to hear my story. There's no one in this room that's going to understand some of my stuff, and I have some stuff. I have a lot of stuff, actually. So I wait for everybody to divvy up, and I'm like, oh, there's just one of me, and there's only the instructors left. I guess I don't have to do a 5th step. One of the instructors comes over, and she's dressed like Laura Ingalls, and she's all in flowers, and I'm a tomboy, and I'm thinking, no way. And she said, let's go outside. I want to hear your steps. And I went outside, and that woman had done some stuff that had my head turned in. I was like, okay, I can tell her my stuff. And I worked the steps with Kim, and I've got very, very active. And I want to share with you that what I've done since then and until now hasn't changed a whole lot. There's a spoke, and it's called My Recovery. And at the center of it, believe it or not, today is my own God, but in the beginning it was Kim's. And then there was commitments, and then there was meeting attendance, and then there was H&I, and then there was being of service just to other people. It doesn't necessarily have to be at a meeting commitment or to an alcoholic. It's just being of service and being willing to be there for people. And there's all these things that I do, including prayer, including journal, including staff work, including sponsoring. And I don't know which part of that whole entire wheel holds it together, so I've never been courageous enough to stop doing any of those parts. Because I don't know which one of it, it's all going to come crumbling down and all of a sudden I'll be struck drunk. Scott talked about a 10% success rate. When I was new, old timers at the Gucci meeting said, look to your right and look to your left because only one of you will be here in 5 years. Scared the shit out of me. I did not want to go back to how I was living. Did not want to. There were a lot of things that used to be said in Alcoholics Anonymous that were very, very rough. I don't hear them a lot anymore. I don't hear that we get told that we have to do things. You know what I mean? I hear, oh, it's of your own understanding and do what you can. And that's not how I was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. In 95, we had the World Convention in San Diego. I was privileged enough to go down with Larry, Lorraine, everybody from San Clemente, including my mom. That's when my mom picked up on Mike Mallon. Mike was here from New Jersey. We were there. I did this whole international experience, and I started to realize that's where my God started to be born. When I started to see the world flags and international, and how many countries were there, and Jack Murphy Stadium and San Diego running out of coffee. What? A city running out of coffee. Next, it was going to be cigarettes, and there was going to be mass, you know. There was going to be hysteria soon, no nicotine. And I remember being at the Jack Murphy Stadium, and I don't know who was on my this side, but I remember my mom was to my left, and when we stood to do the Lord's Prayer, and 80,000 people said, Our Father, my knees buckled, and my mom said, Kim, and Larry turned around, and he put me in my seat, because I was out. I passed out. It was such a powerful experience for me. I try today, really, to the best of my ability, to stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to remain open. I do some crazy stuff. I sponsor some wild women. I have a lot of fun. I also, I've had a year. I've had a year where every time I've stood up, I've been knocked down. I've had a year. In February, I discovered $16 million missing and in Lebanon from my CFO, where I had to fight to try and save my company for 120 days. The forbearance period ended. We didn't have the funding. I worked with KPMG. I worked with everybody I could to save a company. We had to close our company down. I don't feel as bad for me losing the company as I do for the employees that we had to lay off. We couldn't offer COBRA because the company closed. I feel horrible for the 252 vendors that we owe across the country, mom and pop shops that are probably going to close. The man that took the money, I pray for him every single day. In March, someone broke into my home and took all of my jewelry, including my late father's possessions and all of my watches, so I don't have an attachment to watches anymore. And as a result of all of that, I found myself in a position right now to be liquidating all of my own assets just to try and put food on the table for my family. But I have to tell you that through that, what I've learned this year, it's more important now for me at 20 years to remain teachable and to continually ask for help. I have people calling all the time and I say, yes, please, I do need help. Yes, please, can you come over and help me pack? Yes, please, can you help me come over and clean because I can't afford to clean the house? And walking through, I have an AA realtor who just did the deal for me, and he and I have been really close, and it's been about God. And at the center of my life today, the atheist little 23-year-old crystal meth addict that arrived is standing here, literally starting from square one again, but the instructions and the foundation, the way of life and what I do haven't changed. The formula hasn't changed. But what has changed is that I try and put God right in the center of all of it. I try and find out what I can do for you instead of worrying about what's happening to me. Because what's happening to me is all going to work itself out. And I know that next year I'll look back at this year in retrospect and go, oh, there was the perfect plan. I like to close my story with talking a little bit about what Dr. Paul did for me. I like to close my story with what happened for me. It took me 4 years to realize, 4 years. The defogging for this little party animal took quite a while, because remember, I partied from 8 to 23. It took me a while to realize the significance of Dr. Paul leaving his 25th birthday party and what he had me do every Wednesday was go to dinner with him and Max, Chinese food in South Laguna. Max didn't like me and I didn't care for her. She was mean to me. She didn't make me feel special. You know, she was a little judgmental and critical, which is me projecting all over her. But every week I went, and every week we'd go to the Gucci meeting. And he made me take my cake, and he made me wear a dress. Clancy-ish. And I would go to the Gucci meeting, and I would put on this little Bank of America Charlotte Russe outfit and my high heels, and I knew I was going to break my ankle getting up on the stage, and I'd take cakes with him because he asked me to. And it was on, I think it was my fourth or fifth birthday, and I looked at him and I said, you know, I don't think I've ever thanked you for cold stuffing me. And he goes, you're welcome, sweetheart. And it was the year that he came out with his books, There's More to the Steps, or There's More to Not Drinking Than Just the Steps. And that year he had signed it and given it to me as my birthday present. And I said, Dr. Paul, why did you leave your party? How did you even know with that many people there that there was someone sitting out on the curb? And he looked at me and he goes, isn't that what we do? And ever since that year, I try and go outside of a birthday party, or I try and go outside of a dance. God, those are nerve-wracking. Dancing without alcohol. And I try and look for the person who doesn't feel like they belong. And I try and just say, hey, how you doing? Is there anything I can do for you? And that's what was done for me. And you know, when I think about, hey, that's what we do, I sometimes forget that. Sometimes I get so busy in my to-do list that I forget, hey, that's what we do. But if had it not been for my mom being willing to leave Dana Point, go all the way out to Lake Forest to get a kid to take her all the way to Laguna Beach to have her eat some food. And it wasn't for a man leaving his own party where a lot of people wanted his attention and a lot of people wanted to congratulate him, but he went outside. If that wasn't what we do, I wouldn't be alive today. I truly believe that I was at the end of a really ugly disease and all of my resources were gone, and that it was lonely enough, and that the thoughts were there, and that I would have tried to find a permanent solution to what was then a temporary problem. It looked really permanent. It felt really permanent. And there's been times in my sobriety that I just have to remember this is what we do. And I go to a meeting, sometimes I'd rather watch Scandal or Grey's Anatomy, but that's what we do. We go to a meeting and we reach out to the other people, and I'm really grateful for that. And I have to say that, you know, my mom and I have done a heck of a lot of healing. You know, my brother ended up getting a PhD in writing. He specialized in dual diagnoses. I wonder why, with his mom and his sister, and that we have a really beautiful sober family. And they all attended my birthday party down at Aliso Beach, and I looked at the three or four generations of us all sitting there, and I knew that birthday party was for me, but it was really a thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I looked at my nieces and my nephews and my own daughter, and I looked around and I realized that none of them have seen all of what we had to experience, and that we have changed that dynamic in our family, and that we wouldn't have changed that dynamic without the traditions in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love my mom dearly, and, you know, we're like sisters. You know, every now and then I have to step back and say, don't talk to her like that. She's your mother. Show her some respect. And I'm grateful because that's what I've been taught here. I'm grateful for my sobriety, and I'm grateful that's what we do. Thank you.